A special thank you to everyone who is tuning in to Lullaby the Fear podcast. If this is your first time and you love the show, then please leave a 5-star rating wherever you listen to podcasts to become a true Fear Cult ambassador. It supports the show for free and motivates me to research deeper cases. Sweet dreams.
It has been established that persons who have recently died have been returning to life and committing acts of murder.
The first simply disappeared, the other two died.
Hello, hello, my pretties. It's your host, Ashley Lanny, your certified nightmare prescriber and non-destructive cult leader. Emphasis in non-destructive. How is everyone doing? It's been a hot second. I haven't released an episode in well over a month, and it's because I was running at roughly 20% because everything in my life was just hitting really quick, really fast, and I just needed to take some time for myself. I announced it on social media, and everyone's been really supportive, and thank you, boo-boos. I really appreciate it because it's important to take time and take a break. Like, there's nothing wrong with it. Like, if you're just having a really rough week, allow yourself to take as much time as you can, even if it's only 10 minutes and you have to go for a stroll down the block. Put on some, now normally I would say like aggressive early 2000s emo music, but something I've experienced learning about psychology is maybe not. Maybe throw on some peaceful Celtic Irish music. That stuff is really good for you. But I'm not a psychiatrist and I'm not a psychologist, so you want to listen to 2000s emo? Then you do what works for you. But going back to what I was saying, just remember that if you can't give 100% because you're trudging at 20%, it's not selfish to take time and log off and take care of yourself, because at the end of the day, it's only you who is in your head. So take care of it and be nice to yourself. If I'm going to get aggressive, it's going to be with this statement. Fear Cult, be nice to yourself, okay? Here at the Fear Cult, we are big advocates for positive mental health, especially when we delve into the depths of true crime. So with that being said, I'm back and welcome to Lullaby. On the previous episode, we covered the monster who is Luca Rocco Magnotta, the man-child who wanted fame so bad that he killed for it. This lullaby is an even darker turn. We're examining what evil has roamed this earth in the past. Massive disclaimer, this is a worst of the worst episode, or what we here at the Fear Cult call wow episodes. So my sources include the journal written by the killer himself that he wrote in prison in 1928. And the details are heavy. So get comfortable, because sweet dreams are made of these. The following story contains subject matter involving graphic descriptions of abuse, torture, crimes against children, rape, and murder. Please take into consideration that some topics may be disturbing for some listeners. Listener discretion is advised.
Lifetime, I've murdered 21 human beings. I've committed thousands of burglaries, robberies, larcenies, arsons. And last but not least, I have committed sodomy on more than 1,000 human beings. For all these things, I am not the least bit sorry. I have no conscience. That does not bother me. I don't believe in man, God, nor devil. If you or anyone else will take the trouble and have the intelligence or patience to follow and examine every one of my crimes and actions, you will find that I have consistently followed one idea through all my life. I preyed upon the weak, the harmless, the unsuspecting. Those I harmed were weaklings, either mentally or physically, and led them into a trap where they were either asleep or drunk, helpless in some way. And I am sorry that I am unable to murder the whole damned human race. I am Carl Panzram, the butcher of humanity.
Charles Carl Panzram was born on June 28, 1891, in East Grand Forks, Minnesota, United States. His parents were German immigrants, Johann Panzram and Mathilda Elizabeth Baldwin Panzram. Carl was the youngest of five children, three brothers and one sister. According to Carl, his family was hardworking, ignorant, and impoverished. They lived on a small farm in the center of the Dust Bowl, where growing and harvesting crops served as difficult labor for the community. Johann Panzram, the father of the household, was an aggressive alcoholic who lived in disappointment that he did not attain the American dream by traveling to North America from Germany. The five children would wake up early to go to school for 8 hours. Then they had to rush home to do the chores around the farm into the late hours of the night, only running on 2 hours of sleep a day. Before the age of six, Carl recalled being chased down and beaten by anyone, including his family, if he didn't do anything to their standards. It was also around this time that Carl had begun lying to manipulate others around him, to lure the blame away from himself. He started stealing petty items and usually getting away with it. At a very young age, Carl started to see that those who were both stronger mentally and physically around him were not getting stepped on or abused. Carl said, quote, "When I was very young, at the age of 5 or 6, I was a thief and a liar, and a mean, despicable one at that. The older I got, the meaner I got." When Carl was between the ages of 6 and 7, his father abandoned the family with no explanation. This left most of the hard work to the children, and soon Carl's older brothers abandoned the family as well, not wanting to work the endless hours for what seemed like nothing, leaving Carl, his mother, sister, and one of his older brothers to help take care of the homestead. In 1899, when Carl was only 8 years old, he was arrested for public intoxication. When his mother Mathilda took him home, she beat him terribly and demanded for him to go work in the fields immediately. The hatred for authority began brewing inside of the young child and only increased his alcoholism. When Carl was 9 years old, he developed an ear infection that caused pressure points in the back of his neck. Over time, the infection developed into a high fever that spread into the cells located behind his ear. The bacterial infection worsened over time due to his mother not being able to afford a hospital trip. Carl's mastoiditis had to be treated because it would cause further injury to the brain that could result in lifelong damage. His mother Mathilda took it upon herself to perform the surgery at home without any sanitation or anesthetic. Using the improper supplies, 9-year-old Carl was operated on the kitchen table to remove the infection behind his ear. This operation was not successful, and soon Mathilda was forced to take her son to a professional surgeon. Classic serial killer ingredient, the head injury. So due to his mastoiditis, criminologists and Carl Panzram believe that it did cause some minor brain damage to his hypothalamus. Now, this is where my educational background specializes in physiology. The hypothalamus, it's responsible for regulating sexual arousal and emotions such as anger. The main function is to keep one's body in a stable state that is known as homeostasis. So with an injury to this structure, it can disrupt many normal functions like childhood development, emotional control, obviously, and sleeping patterns, to name a few. So according to psychiatrists, Carl displayed multiple characteristics of psychopathy, such as his pathological lying and manipulation. And I also want to point out that he lied so much to get through everything in his life to avoid being punished, except when it came to him confessing about his murders in his journal. Once he started to hate himself, which we'll get to, he had no care in the world, zero remorse, and he's like, "I'll tell you exactly what I did, because I don't understand why I am the way I am. So if people want to figure me out, here you go." Because Carl, he will give investigators the dates, the locations, and even specific news articles to confirm his crimes. So Carl also checked the boxes for poor behavioral control, juvenile delinquency, and he lacked empathy. He becomes a career criminal and he is extremely irresponsible because he lacked aspirations and goals except for one. He wanted to kill every human on the face of this planet with his bare hands. His words, not mine. These are all characteristics of a psychopath, confirmed by medical professionals. So at this point, Carl is, he's only 9 years old, and he's been arrested for public intoxication, and he's already developed alcoholism, and he witnessed his father's dependency on liquor to escape, and he adopted the addiction for himself. Now, Carl is not happy with his life. He's tired of others belittling him and beating him up, and this invoked this deep rage that he will unleash on the world. When I say that Carl Panzram is the Hulk of serial killers, I am dead serious. This man was fueled by hatred of humanity with zero shame or remorse, and he was 6 feet tall and pushing 200 pounds of shredded muscle. I'll get into his forced workout plan later, but just for the visual, as I go on to tell the story, picture a heavily aggressive Jason Statham. That's who would play Carl Panzram in a movie. And now that we're warmed up to the story, I'm going to switch it into the third gear. So let's continue. In 1902, when Carl was 11 years old, he concluded that he was done with his miserable farm life. Scoping out his options, he decided that before he began his transient lifestyle, he would rob one of his neighbors who had more money compared to most. Sneaking into the home, he stole everything that he could, including food for the road and a large pistol. He left the house with a gun tucked under his jacket and made his way for the train yard. In the early 1900s, the common method of transport were trains. The transient lifestyle served the poor and the homeless. Young Carl, equipped with a new pistol, snuck onto a freight train heading west. The plan was to travel the world, except Carl missed his connection and was caught by the police and arrested. He was transported back to Minnesota, where he was beat and punished severely, then sent to jail. This is when Carl was transported to the location that he himself stated was the reason he became the butcher of humanity. Carl was sent to Minnesota State Training School for Boys at Red Wing. Here, he learned about man's inhumanity towards its fellow man. The Minnesota State Training School housed 250 boys between the ages of 8 and 21 years old. Upon arrival, Carl was shown his sleeping quarters and was taken for his oral and physical exam. The man who was in charge of him was named George Mann. He explained the school's rules and what was expected of him. George inquired about his parents and previous home life, followed by a thorough examination of his penis and rectum. George asked Carl if he had ever masturbated or engaged in any sexual activity, specifically with other boys. At this point, Carl had not had sexual intercourse. Carl had to participate in Bible studies, along with other courses, which he had trouble with. Learning was not his strong suit. When Carl was not learning as quick as his classmates, he would get whipped with all sorts of objects. He recalled during his first year that he would get beat minimum 4 times a week, and every Saturday, he was beat as if it was part of a ritual. The administration created a paddle spanking machine that was rigged up to a crank, and with each turn of the crank, multiple paddles would hit the backs of the children, leaving welts, blisters, and bruises. The method of reform the training school was using was to beat the delinquent behavior out of the children in hopes of creating a happy, non-problem child. The teachers and officers used Christian religious fear-mongering as their psychological weapon. Except the more they beat Carl, the more he ended up hating religion and those who practiced it. As a child, he never understood how those who spoke the words of love and goodwill towards man could administer such brutality. At 12 years old, Carl explained that he began having cruel revenge thoughts, except he was too young and small to take it out on those hurting him. He decided to take his control over those smaller and weaker than him. Just like the adults at the reform school, anyone would suffice, as long as he was the one to hurt them. The paint shop, as it was coined, was the most popular form of torture to the children at the school. The point of the room was to paint the bodies of the children black and blue. The young children were led into a dimly lit room that housed a large wooden block in the center. They were instructed to strip completely naked and bend over the wood. Once in position, a towel soaked in a high concentration of salt water was draped over the child's shoulders, back, buttocks, and then removed. Next, the man administering the punishments would take a leather belt with holes punched along the length. He would relentlessly crash the abuse upon the skin of the children. The impact caused the skin to come up through the holes. This resulted in instantaneous blisters that would pop. The salt water would then rush to the abrasion. Carl recalled that he received this punishment so frequently that his body was so abused he got lesser punishment to fill the recovery period. The open palms of his hands were instead whipped with a slightly smaller belt. The children became so badly affected that they would not be able to sit on anything softer than a feather pillow. During the regular Bible study lessons, Carl, along with many other children, were made to stand at attention in the school yard for hours while their teacher would teach them the ways of Christianity. Carl explained that this purpose was to train them into becoming good boys, but in the end, he said it made him love Jesus so much that he only wanted to personally crucify him again. Overall, Carl Panzram had very little formative education, and he struggled with the concepts of learning. Because of this, the Institute's teachers never helped him. They only belittled him and beat him more. Carl wanted nothing more than to murder those around him, but he knew that he couldn't do that, especially to get away with it at only 12 years old. He needed a more subtle way for revenge. Carl was given the work of washing dishes at the school's kitchen and waiting on the tables of the officers and teachers. When no one was looking, he would masturbate and ejaculate into the pudding and the ice cream. He would then urinate into their tea and soups, serve it to them, and watch them enjoy it. This was a small way for Carl to impose a form of power over his superiors. No one ever discovered the secret, and when Carl wrote about it in his journal, he only wished that they could read it. One day, while working in the laundry, Carl attempted to escape but was caught. He was whipped and then beat. To get revenge, Carl put rat poison into the rice pudding of his superior, George Mann. In result, Carl was removed from the kitchen and laundry and placed into the band. Out of pure hatred for the facility, Carl took a cotton wrap stick. He dipped it in oil that he found in the laundry and lit the building that housed the paint shop on fire. It caused over $100,000 in damages, adding arson to Panzram's criminal portfolio. He went on to commit multiple arsons to the school, usually never getting caught. The other boys in the school told Carl that if he wanted to get granted release, he had to straighten up and fake it, pretend that he was a devout Christian and was a changed person. Once Carl had a chance to stand in front of the parole board, they granted him release after spending 2 years at the Minnesota Correction School. Over time, some of the correctional officers of the Institute were discharged for sexually sodomizing the children, one being the Institute's superintendent. The purpose of the reform school was to reform through religion, but what Carl had to say about what he learned was, quote, "When I got out of there, I knew all about Jesus and the Bible, so much so that I knew it was a lot of hot air, but that wasn't all I knew. I had been taught by Christians how to be a hypocrite, and I learned more about stealing, lying, hating, burning, and killing. I had learned that a boy's penis could be used for something besides to urinate with, and a rectum would be used for other purposes than crepitating." The concept of an abusive religious institution with the blanket purpose of teaching kids to straighten up and fly right left Carl pretty much like an abused feral dog. The previous neglect from his parents and botched kitchen surgery left him a mess. A certified fucking fruitcake, if you will. And he doesn't deserve any sympathy because there were over 200 other children that went to the same tortures that Carl Panzram endured while at this reform school, and they didn't end up like Carl later in life, or so we know. It was the late 1800s, early 1900s, and the suck it up and take the belt was pretty common. And I grew up in the 90s, and some of my friends got the belt. I didn't, thank God, but I got the look. And I knew if I got the look from my mom, I was in for it. Although she never hit me, my mom had a specific form of punishment down to an art. If I got the look, which was basically a quick turn of the head, straight-faced with pinhole eyes, I knew that if I kept it up, I was screwed, because that meant I was going to be sat down on my bed and lectured for hours, and I'm not exaggerating. We're pushing 1.5 to 2 hours. My mom knew how to lecture. And I couldn't rebuttal. I was young and I had to sit through it. And the more she yelled, the bigger her forehead vein got. And if I really did something bad, then that's when the passionate anger projectile accidental spit would happen. And I wore glasses, so if any of it hit my glasses and dare I laughed, woof. Long story short, we laugh about it now. And she's going to listen to this episode. Yes, mother, I revealed to the world that you spit when you're pissed off. But I just turned 30 years old, so what are you going to do about it? No, I'm completely kidding. My mom, I'm an adult, and I never want to piss off my mom. I love her way too much. She doesn't deserve that. And I was a good kid. So that goes to show you, you don't have to physically or mentally abuse a child to discipline them. The biggest importance is to explain the difference between right and wrong, proper morals and ethics, and what consequences are if they are repeated. And Carl Panzram, he didn't receive the look. He got beat, physically abused, and mentally demoralized. And all this left was this internal rage inside of him that he told himself one day, when he was old enough and stronger, that he would get away with murdering humanity. Carl is now 12, 13 years old, and he just gets released from reform school. And he gets sent back to live at the farm with his mother and his other siblings. And all his mother did was put him back to work in the fields. Carl decided that to get out of this line of work, he had to convince his mother that he wanted to become a preacher at a church. And she believed him. So she sends him to go work under a German Lutheran church in North Dakota, which didn't go smooth. Carl started getting beat by the pastor, who did not put up with Carl's attitude whenever Carl beat up another student for calling him reform school. They would point at him and go, reform school, reform school. And then Carl was like, oh yeah, I'll show you fucking reform school. And he would fumble their asses. And the German preacher took the student's side and started whipping Carl regularly. Carl decided to try to fight back, and practically went SmackDown versus Raw on this German preacher. The preacher won because he was bigger and stronger, and Carl, being a poetry savant, recalled this by saying, quote, "Be a man either great or small in size, Colonel Colt will equalize." Colonel Colt being a heavy caliber Colt pistol. So Carl manages to steal a Colt pistol and purposely he starts an argument in the middle of class. The preacher strides over and starts whipping Carl with a belt, in which Carl fights back and the preacher falls to the ground. The class is in an uproar and Carl grabs his gun and he points it at the preacher who's laying on the floor and he pulls the trigger 3 times, but it doesn't go off. Carl legit shrugs it off and just walks home. And he assumed that the other students would take his side and explain how the preacher started beating him and that Carl was only defending himself. No. The school contacted Carl's family. Carl, he tried to explain to his older brother what happened. And his brother has him in a chokehold this entire time, demanding him to give him this Colt pistol so he wouldn't do anything stupid again. And when his brother finally lets him go to go find it, Carl actually planned that the next time he seen his brother, he was gonna murder him. So we can see this trend of, I can do something bad, but as soon as I get called out for it, I'm gonna pout like a child and try to kill you. Kind of like Sideshow Bob syndrome. Ooh, I shouldn't have compared him to Sideshow Bob. I take that back. I love me some Sideshow Bob. Go Kelsey Grammer. So Carl decides to run away because his brother never comes back, so he didn't get the chance to kill him. Running away, Carl is 13 years old, and he is now on his own. In 1904, Carl was 13 years old and a drifter with no dreams or goals. He started riding freight trains and boxcars across the Pacific Coast. Whenever he stayed at a new town, he would lie and tell stories about how he was abandoned and he was a Christian orphan who only wanted a loving home. This got Carl food and the occasional place to sleep. In return, he would rob the families and jump the next train. One of the first horrific sexual encounters that Carl experienced was when he was 14 years old. While curled in the corner of a boxcar, he got lonely and decided to get up and wander to find other hobos to talk to. He came across four burly, hairy men and decided to strike up a conversation. The four men attempted to persuade Carl into having sex with them, but he denied. The four men then forced Carl onto the floor and sodomized him. He recalled crying and pleading for the men to stop, but they never did. When it was all over, Carl was left sadder and even more isolated as a teenager. The next encounter happened while Carl was roaming around a small town in the West. He was feeling lonely again and found a horse stable that housed a group of local hobos. Carl seen the men drinking around a barrel fire and approached them, explaining his fake sob story to gain their sympathy. The men offered him alcohol and Carl became very drunk. The group of men raped Carl and left him there alone and drunk. He detailed in his journal that those sexual assaults had taught him many lessons. One being that wanting something bad enough does not make it happen. It only makes people desperate. Carl believed that everything was acquired by force and might. Until the day he died, Carl lived his life forcing his brutality onto others, much like how others in his past had treated him. Carl Panzram expressed that those men made him what he was, a cold-blooded criminal. The transient teenager found himself in Butte, Montana. He was arrested for petty larceny and sent to another reform school. He spent a year there working at the institute and constantly getting beat for his stubborn attitude. There was a guard there who was an ex-prize fighter who decided to take special watch over Carl. His name was Officer Bushart. The consistent nagging from Bushart only made Carl decide that he was going to kill him. One day, while Bushart was getting his boots polished by another inmate, Carl snuck up behind him with a wooden board made out of solid oak with iron on the end of it and cracked him across the back of the head. The man collapsed but did not die. Because Carl was only 15 years old, they could not send a minor to a state prison. Instead, they kept him at the reform school and punished him even more. Carl was sent to the medical ward to get his foreskin forcefully cut off to stop him from masturbating and to calm down. Carl after made friends with a boy his age named Jimmy Benson, and together they devised an escape plan. The two succeeded and managed to jump on a train and traveled around North Dakota, robbing and burning down churches. After a month, the two made their separate ways. In 1906, Carl joined the U.S. Military Infantry Unit after lying to an army recruiter about his age. On his very first day, Carl was written up for his insubordination because he had gotten drunk and refused work duty. 2 months later, he was caught stealing from the supply storage, and he was sentenced to 3 years in U.S. military prison at the famous Port Leavenworth in Kansas. Carl's sentence was passed by William Howard Taft, the future 27th President of the United States of America. And this would not be the only time that their paths would cross. It was the following experience that Carl attributes to his complete loss of what goodness was left in him. His prison number was 1874, and he was sentenced to a third-class prisoner. These prisoners had zero speaking privileges and were forced to wear straitjackets laced so tight that it would cause them to fall unconscious if they acted up. At 20 years old, Carl Panzram was 6 feet tall and weighed close to 200 pounds, of pure muscle fueled by internal hatred. Over the course of serving his 3-year sentence at Leavenworth Prison, Carl found himself constantly being punished for scaring the other residents. Soon, he was equipped with a 50-pound iron ball and chain that he was locked into 24/7. Prisoners were required to eat, sleep, and work in the device. Carl worked as a rock miner at a quarry that was located 3 miles away from the prison. He worked for 8.5 hours, with the scorching sun beaming into his flesh every single day. The entire time, he was shackled to that metal ball. He was required to carry it in his arms, along with his 18-pound hammer, and he would walk the daily 2.5-hour commute to and from the quarry. Carl explained that he was so exhausted every day that he quit masturbating. But deep down the exhaustion, he manifested into darker thoughts of murder. He openly hated the human race, but maintained a small amount of affection for himself. But soon any form of love for even him would soon be destroyed entirely. In 1910, Carl Panzram was released from Leavenworth. He was 21 years old. Making his way by train to Denver, Colorado, he continued stealing for quick money. He would frequent the red light district to have sex with female sex workers, until one day he woke up completely nude of his belongings. A week had passed and Carl had felt sick. He found out that he had contracted a severe case of gonorrhea. According to Carl, this left him with a sexual distaste for women, and he started having sex with men. Occasionally when he was drunk, he would engage in sex with women, but this was rare. Carl was soon caught stealing a pedal bike and sent to the county jail. He was then introduced to a 50-year-old man, and the two started discussing life and how to make money outside of prison, usually involving blowjobs. The two built a bond, and Carl swore to bust his new friend out of jail when he himself was released. After a few months, Carl was released and robbed a hardware store. He then used the materials and the saws to break into the prison to rescue his friend, except he got caught, and Carl was placed back into his cell with the 50-year-old man. In his journal, Carl told how the man thought that because Carl had tried to rescue him, that he was in love with him. The man then tried to rape Carl Panzram, but Carl was not about to let another man have control over him or twist his intentions. 21-year-old Carl Panzram manhandled his now ex-friend and sodomized him in the jail cell. Once released, Carl Panzram hoboed his way to Hutchinson, Kansas, where he joined Colonel Dickey's Circle D Wild West show at the state fair. This job didn't last long. He was fired for starting fights with the workers and even punching the horses. The trouble didn't stop in Kansas. Carl traveled to Missouri and found that Colonel Dickey's circus had gone there as well. Carl personally took it upon himself to get revenge for firing him. He burned down the horse stables and the performers' tents. As Carl continued traveling, he found his way to St. Louis. He started working as a strike breaker against union employees, which he loved. He loved the power and the control he felt, but it didn't last long. Carl got bored and decided to leave. Along the way, he started brutally raping as many hobos and even policemen as he could, and then he would steal their belongings. Carl crossed state lines, robbing and raping men and boys as it pleased him. He felt that it was his way of getting pleasure and hurting humanity at the same time. Carl picked up a short, overweight, rosy-cheeked boy who he used as a sex slave. The two traveled to Jacksonville, Texas. Carl had gotten arrested for another robbery, and the young boy was taken with him by the officers. The boy was used by the officers sexually while Carl was in jail. Once they were done with the boy, he was thrown back to Carl Panzram's care. Over time, Carl tried to silver-tongue his way out of his sentence, which was unsuccessful. The punishment he received was being masted by what was known as the snorting pole. This was a whipping post that hung a prisoner by his wrists until their toes could barely scrape the dirt, and they were beat with a long whip with lead attached to the frayed ends. When Carl was released, he traveled to Mexico, where he attempted to join the Mexican military, but the Federales would not accept him. He continued to train jump, and he met up with two other hobos in Fresno, California. They bunked out in the boxcars together. One event occurred when the train's brakeman officer caught them. When Carl drew his gun, the brakeman explained that he himself never threw homeless men off of his trains, and that he would let them stay. He then gave Carl all of his money and valuables and attempted to leave. Carl Panzram shoved the man to the floor of the boxcar and raped him throughout the night. When Carl had his fill, he pointed his gun to the other two hobos and forced them to sodomize the brakeman as well, leaving him battered and unconscious. Carl hasn't murdered anyone yet, but he has been running his wiener across state lines, robbing and sodomizing everyone who he deemed as weaker than him. And in his journal, he addresses this by saying, quote, "I looked them all over, and whenever I met one that wasn't too rusty looking, I would make them raise their hands and drop their pants. I wasn't very particular either. I rode them young and old, tall and short, white and black. It made no difference to me at all, except they were human beings." That's a very chilling statement, because at this point in the timeline, Carl hates people, but he has pretty good self-control over himself when it comes to not going through with murder completely. He has had multiple attempts of committing murder, but he has never cared enough to see it fully through if he failed in the first place. And Carl Panzram is one of the most deliberate serial killers to have ever existed, and it is one pretty much with the sole purpose of disposing the entire human race. Not just children, not just men, not women, not non-binary, it was everyone. Because at some point in his formative years, some category of person always held power over him, and hurt him, and he wanted revenge. When it comes to the types of serial killers, Carl Panzram is known as a disorganized, power control-oriented killer. And criminal psychology experts define these types of killers as those who seek full control over their victims to overcome their own personal feelings of powerlessness and/or inadequacy. And although sexual abuse of their victims is common, it's not the motivation of lust that triggers them. It's just simply another way to dominate their victims more, to which Carl has admitted to many times in his journal. Carl preferred to sodomize weaker men because for him to dominate them, it made them unbelievably vulnerable and it made him feel godlike. So when it came to the act of sodomy, Carl said, quote, "I know more about sodomy than old boy Oscar Wilde ever thought of knowing. I would start in the morning with sodomy, work hard at it all day, and sometimes half the night. I was so busy committing sodomy that I didn't have any time to serve Jesus, as I had been taught to do in the reform schools." So this man weaponized sodomy. And wow, that sounded really intense. Perfect for a wow episode, if I do say so myself. He also was very disorganized, and he acts upon his impulses. And when the time is right, he uses whatever weapon is available to him. And Carl could slam his massive hands around the sides of your head, and he could squeeze your eyeballs out like a vice. Like, the grip strength alone on this man, ugh, he's a beast. And he asserted that prison only made him stronger. And I mean, we went over his bloody forced hypertrophy endurance training program at Leavenworth, at the rock quarry. Like, every day for 3 years, close to 9 hours a day, he would bash boulders with 20 pounds, and then he had a 50-pound ball and chain wrapped to his foot. Like, this guy was unintentionally manufactured to be a beast in prison. And he was no gentle giant. He wanted to fuck you up just because you were human. And he wasn't the smartest individual, but he wasn't an idiot. Like, he was no Edmund Kemper. And Edmund Kemper had an IQ of 145. It's like Carl Panzram versus Edmund Kemper. Oh, it'd be like Freddy versus Jason. Or Kane versus The Undertaker. I do think Panzram would take him, though. But the plot alone... ugh, if anyone wants to make a shitty B-rated movie, there's your plot. You're welcome. All right, so Carl is now on the move again, and he was just in Fresno, California, where he assaulted the train officer, and his robbery and rape numbers at this point are insane. But he's just getting started. Since leaving Leavenworth Prison, Carl Panzram had been using the alias Jeff Davis and Jack Allen to float under the radar for his crimes. He was now in Oregon, where he was caught and arrested for stealing a watch. When he went to trial, they told him that if he pleaded guilty for the petty theft, that he would only have to serve a short sentence to save the taxpayers' dollars. Carl pled guilty, and he was sentenced to 7 years. When the officers hauled him into his prison cell, they slammed the bars and started mocking him for being fooled. However, once the cell block was dark and no officers were around, Carl managed to escape his cell and jam all the locks of the other prisoners. He then began ransacking and destroying everything he could touch in the prison. He locked himself in an area and destroyed water pipes, electrical systems, radiators, and tore apart every piece of furniture and set it on fire. When the officers managed to break into the area, Carl was laughing maniacally as they put out the blaze. He was beat and sent back to his cell. He attempted the insanity plea but could not fool the doctors. Carl swore that he was never going to carry out his 7-year sentence, a promise that he intended to keep. It was 1914, and 23-year-old Carl Panzram was serving his sentence in Oregon State Prison, where he met warden Harry Minto. This man was considered almost as dangerous and headstrong as Carl Panzram himself. The prison had very cruel and inhumane ways to torture the prisoners, specifically Carl Panzram, who faced them all. Although the lead-ended cat-o'-nine-tails was the most common beating, one of the worst was the hummingbird. It was a steel bathtub filled with 5 inches of freezing water. Inmates would then get chained by their limbs inside, and the officer in charge of administrating the torture had a wet sponge with electrical wires connected to the generator. The electrical currents were directed into the inmate's body. Carl revealed that it felt like hundreds of scalding needles being pushed into the flesh that lasted for hours. Carl was aware that escaping was going to be difficult, because the warden monitored him like a hawk. Carl started rallying other prisoners and convincing them to try to escape as well. Carl proudly manipulated a young teen to ask the warden if he could work in the prison farm. When the warden agreed, the kid launched into a full-on sprint to the fence line to flee, a plan concocted by Carl in his cell. Every officer chased the kid down, and the warden beat the kid until he could hardly breathe. Later, the kid found a gun and shot the warden point blank, killing him instantly. With Warden Harry Minto dead, the prison replaced him with his brother, John Minto. He had heard about the trouble that Carl Panzram had created and instigated with the other prisoners. John Minto made it his mission to make the life of Carl Panzram a living hell, but he underestimated who he was dealing with. Full of ego because of his ability to manipulate the other prisoners, Carl wasted no time stirring up riots. Carl would rob all the stores in the prison, give the weapons to the prisoners, and make them start fights as he sat back and watched the officers and other inmates get beat and injured. One time, Carl stole multiple bottles of lemon extract with over 80% alcohol content, and he got a group of gullible inmates drunk. Carl got them to start a riot while he remained sober, and he then attempted to rush the building amongst the commotion, but got caught and immediately detained. He went to what was called the bullpen. In his journal, he described the smaller internalized prison system that had the worst inmates. They were to walk in a circle all day and not step in or out of line, and if they did, they would get brutally beat. None of this stopped Carl Panzram. He continued to instigate and bring hell to everyone in the prison. Other inmates attempted to escape, which Carl was punished for. Him and two other men were stripped naked, chained to a door while the officers hosed them down with a full pressure fire hose that caused their bodies to turn black and swollen from impact. They would leave them partially deaf and blind. At one point, Carl pointed out that he spent 61 days in solitary confinement where he wasn't fed, and he only survived by eating the infestation of cockroaches in the basement. Soon after, the torture caught the attention of the public, which resulted in Warden John Minto and 10 other officers getting fired. He was replaced with an ex-veteran named Murphy. Carl was pleasantly surprised by the new warden. The prison offered no brutality and no religion under Murphy's watch. Carl recalled, quote, "A lot of Murphy's theories were way over my head, and I was too dumb to understand all that he told me. But one thing that he did tell me I did understand was this. He told me that he looked at my record and that it was just as bad as he had been told. The other officers and the former warden told him that I was the worst man in the prison, and they thought that I was the meanest and most cowardly degenerate they'd ever seen or heard of. I told him that I agreed with them. And then Murphy told me that he didn't believe them at all." With that response, Carl asked the new warden to show him a more dangerous inmate than himself, and Warden Murphy told him that he would give him his honor if he wouldn't try to escape, and he would let Carl leave every day as long as he came back for supper time to be in his cell. Of course, Carl lied through his teeth and said that he would not try to escape. Warden Murphy opened the gates just as he promised, and Carl stood there gobsmacked, unable to move. The first while, Carl never left the prison gates. He didn't try to escape. The warden continued to be kind to Carl and even gave him a job. He also offered him a spot on the prison baseball team. Carl didn't excel at sports, and the warden had him join the prison marching band instead, which Carl soon quit. Carl started going out at night, but he would always come back, just as he promised the warden, until one day when he heard a train go by and decided that he didn't want to serve his last 4 years. Carl ran away but was immediately captured the next day, and he was sent back to Oregon State Prison. The warden told Carl that he was disappointed in him and sent him back to his cell. And from his cell, he was sent back to the bullpen to be tortured. Months passed and Carl managed to steal a couple handsaws, a chef's uniform, and a bar spreader. One night, Carl escaped his cell and hopped a train to his next destination, New Haven, Connecticut. Warden Murphy was fired, but he started the outlook on new prison reform. Carl, now being free from prison, he was performing his regular home invasion robberies when, out of pure coincidence, he stumbled into the home of William Howard Taft. At this point in time, in 1920, Taft was sitting in the Supreme Court and was now the former 27th President of the United States of America. William Howard Taft was also the man who personally sent Carl Panzram to military prison at Leavenworth years prior, when he was the Secretary of War. Upon discovering this, Carl was enraged. He ransacked the house and stole Taft's personal .45 Colt automatic. He left with $40,000 in bonds and valuables, and he used his new money to travel to New York City, where he purchased a yacht named the Akiska, Carl wrote in his journal the following. Then I figured out it'd be a good plan to hire a few sailors to work for me. Get them onto my yacht, get them drunk, commit sodomy on them, rob them, and then kill them. This I done. We would wine and dine, and then when they were drunk enough, they would go to bed. When they were asleep, I would get my 45 Colt automatic. This I stole from Mr. Taft's house, and I'd blow their brains out. After raping 10 different men he had hired to work for him, he murdered them in cold blood and dumped their corpses into the ocean. Carl hired 2 more men to help sail south, but when a dangerous storm caused the yacht to crash, the 2 men managed to escape from Carl, who intended to kill them. Carl has officially started his murdering spree, so he's killed 10 people and he dumped them in the waters between the Bronx and Manhattan in New York. So this is when his yacht gets ruined and he sort of goes back to his usual burglaries. And he even had a shootout with the police just because he was bored, which did land him in a short stint in jail again. And then he started changing his name even more. He had so many, and everyone pretty much knew his face, but his name was always different. Panzeram's now sick of America. He says, everybody kind of knows my face, they don't really know my name, so I think I'm gonna skip town and be a little safe with myself. So he stows away on a ship, and he goes to Angola, Central Africa. And this wasn't the best idea for Carl, because he was extremely racist to the African people, and he was still committing his acts of sodomy on homeless men. And at one point, he purchased an 11-year-old girl for $8 from her parents in Central Africa. And the parents told him that she was a virgin, which is what he wanted. And that night, Carl took the child home and he discovered that she wasn't a virgin. Okay, this is terrible. So Carl takes her back to her family and says, you lied to me and this child is not a virgin. So the parents, award of the fucking year to these guys, they exchange their 11-year-old for their younger 8-year-old daughter, and turned out she wasn't a virgin either, according to Carl. So he returned the little girl back to her parents. So Carl, at this point, he does have a job and he's working at the Sinclair Oil Company, and he's still longing for a child, but he doesn't want a girl, so he goes in search for a boy this time. And this boy that he is attracted to worked as a table waiter at the Sinclair Oil Company. Now, Carl said that he taught the boy the art of sodomy, and the kid didn't like it, and he told their boss. So Carl gets fired, and due to Carl's superiority complex, he marched into the boss's office and beat the living crap out of him. And Carl rushed to the American consul and demanded that he could go back home to America because of all the shit he just started. And Carl puts on his customer service voice and he's like, look, Africa is a great country. I love it. It's great. It's fantastic. But it's not for me right now and I need to get back to America. But what Carl didn't realize was that his former boss at the Sinclair Oil Company called. He told the embassy, yeah, you don't want to let this guy out of your country. So they didn't. Or at least, they didn't want to pay for Carl's expenses for him to go first class back to America. And Carl thought that he was the bee's knees and should be gone first class back home. But because he didn't get that, he stuck around in Africa for a little bit longer. He's bored and alone in his own pathetic misery, and he's sitting in what would be described as this abandoned parking lot. And he's sitting there, and a boy about 11 or 12 years old is walking by, and Carl hails him over and he manipulates him to go into this gravel pit that's about a quarter mile away, and he rapes the boy, and then with his bare hands he beats him until his head exploded and there was brain matter leaking from his ears. With his bare hands he crushed a child's skull. This is insanity This is insanity to me. Carl is a psychopath, and we know this. He was diagnosed with our favorite term here at the Fear Cult, antisocial personality disorder, from the psychiatrist and psychologist, not me diagnosing him. He was legit diagnosed with that. He had complete disregard for others. He was deceitful and highly manipulative. He refused to conform to social norms. He was dangerously impulsive, and he was very irresponsible. Antisocial personality disorder. If you're new to the fear cults, you'll soon find out that that's one of our favorite terms here. So he was aware of all the wrong he was doing, but he justified it by playing the victim. This is what Carl wrote in his journal. Quote, "No one lays a hand on me. No one abuses me in any way. I've been trying to figure it all out, and I have come to the conclusion that if in the beginning I had been treated as I am now, then there wouldn't have been quite so many people that I have robbed, raped, and killed. All my associates, all of my surroundings, the atmosphere of deceit, the treachery, the brutality, the hypocrisy, and everything that is bad and that nothing is good. Why am I what I am? I'll tell you why. I did not make myself what I am. Others had the making of me." Carl purchased a ticket on a steamboat and headed to Lobito Bay. He then hired a canoe with six African men with the purpose of one of Carl's cruelest acts. He took the six men hunting in the country's backwaters. The area was infested with ferocious crocodiles, which Carl knew, and that was why they went there. Carl said, quote, "I was looking for crocodiles. I found them, plenty of them. They were all hungry, so I fed them. I shot all those six men and dumped them in. The crocs did the rest." In 1922, 31-year-old Carl Panzram was on his way back to America. He arrived at the East Coast and traveled to Salem, Massachusetts. He was craving another murder, and Carl found another 11-year-old boy while out and about. Grabbing him by the arm, he told the child that he was going to kill him. And over the course of 3 hours, Carl raped the boy 6 times and then beat his head in with a rock until brain matter was evident. Carl ripped pages from a magazine and shoved them down the boy's throat and left him there lying dead. In 1923, Carl murdered another boy. He sodomized and strangled him with his belt and then dumped his body into some nearby shrubs. Afterwards, Carl went back to New York where he got a job as a bathroom steward. He was fired after starting fights with passengers and his co-workers. Carl was caught robbing an express office soon after. He was then sentenced to 5 years in prison. While incarcerated, he started a fire with a homemade bomb, but this failed. His next attempt to escape was to climb over the prison's 30-foot walls. Carl created a makeshift ladder out of tools, which he got from the yard, and started to climb to his freedom. The ladder ended up snapping, and Carl fell 30 feet to the solid pavement. He broke both his ankles, his legs, his spine, and ruptured both of his testicles. The doctor ended up having to remove one. From this time on, Carl walked with a hobble that proved both painful and limiting, but it never stopped him. While in the hospital, Carl tried to rape another patient, but when he was caught, he was sent back to prison for 3 more years. During his sentence, he was committed to 8 months of solitary confinement in the dark, where he spent that time thinking about committing mass murder in revenge. 18 days following his release, Carl committed 10 more burglaries and murdered another man. He was caught for stealing a radio, and he was sent to 7 years in Washington, D.C. prison. While awaiting trial, Carl had befriended 26-year-old rookie correctional officer Henry Lesser. 26-year-old officer Henry Lesser had just started working as a guard at the district prison in Washington, D.C. Through overheard conversations, Henry discovered the notorious serial killer was being held in the south wing of the building. The criminal was serving 25 years for petty theft, an absurd amount of time for a simple robbery. Officer Henry Lesser was curious of the man who everyone feared, and he wanted to know why. The officer's heels clicked on the concrete as he approached the steel bars. It was dark, and the silhouette of a husky man sat hunched on his cot. The sound of the footsteps coming to a halt caused the inmate to look up.
"What are you in for, sir? What's your criminal record?"
What? How do you know?
"I just had an idea. 20+ years for stealing a radio seems..."
"Overkill? Yeah, I'll say so. It's all right. I deserve everything I get. I'm being held for investigation. I reform people. I kill people and send them out of their misery. This world is a cesspool. They deserve it. We're all stuck in this hellhole."
"That is one way to look at it. I hope that over time you can trust me to be your friend in this place. Seems like you could use one. I can get you snacks and even cigarettes and hope that I can get to learn your story more. You seem like an interesting human."
"Human? Yeah, I'm human, all right. The human race is trash. It's far from extraordinary.
As months had passed in the prison, the officer and the inmate grew a close friendship, one that even made Officer Lesser feel comfortable turning his back towards the murderer. The man swore he'd kill all of humanity. There was a calm night when the young officer was performing his regular cell check, and he entered Carl Panzram's quarters. Officer Lesser turned his back to check the cell bars. Stalking up behind him, Carl Panzram opened his mouth and said,
"You heed my warning, pal, okay? Don't you ever turn your back towards me again. Don't be fooling with me."
"Did you think I was trying to distract you so that I could club you?"
"You're brave, but don't ever do that again. I promise you, turning your back towards me, you're the only man in the world I wouldn't kill. Except I'm very erratic. I don't know what I'll do."
"After everything you've gone through, all of your hardship, crimes, and murders, would you ever write it into a journal so that others can read what you're trying to understand about yourself? Authorities can learn about criminals like you. Think of it as a way to say whatever you feel about what you went through. Help us understand."
"Yeah, I doubt that's something people would find intriguing at all. I mean, I'm a hardened criminal. I have no remorse. Who cares about that? No one should."
"I'll get you the writing materials you need. You write it if you want to, then slip them to me. I will read it."
"No one will read it. I can guarantee you that. But even if no one does, I will write it."
Carl Panzram and Henry Lesser would frequently talk, and Carl respected the officer for it. He was kind, and he was genuinely curious about why Carl was such a monster, which allowed for Henry to convince Carl to write his infamous journal titled Killer, A Journal of Murder. One line read, "It is unnatural that I should have absorbed these things and have become what I am today, a treacherous, degenerate, brutal, human savage devoid of all decent feeling, without conscience, moral, pity, sympathy, principle, or any single good trait. Why am I what I am? I reform people. And to do that, I kill them." After writing the journal, Officer Henry Lesser had it in his possession for 40 years before he was able to publish the accounts. On June 20th, 1929, while working in the laundry, Carl met a supervisor prison guard named Robert Warnke. The two did not get along, to put it mildly. Everyone knew that Carl was not to be messed with, for he had no issue snapping anyone's neck. Carl killed the officer by bludgeoning him with a steel bar in front of all the inmates. He then attempted to murder the other inmates who watched the entire ordeal. Carl was restrained and sent to solitary awaiting his sentence. During his trial, human rights activists fought to save Carl from the death penalty due to all the tortures in the prisons. Carl responded to the public during his trial saying, quote, "I look forward to the seat in the electric chair, or to dance at the end of a rope just like some folks do on their wedding night. The only thanks you and your kind will ever get from me for your efforts on my behalf is that I wished you all had one neck and that I had my hands on it. I have no desire whatever to reform myself. My only desire is to reform people who try to reform me, and I believe that the only way to reform people is to kill them." Carl attempted to act as his own defense attorney, with the intent of pleading guilty and requesting the death penalty. The courts denied his request, and his lawyer wanted him to plead insanity. Carl said that his conscience didn't bother him, that he had no conscience. He believed that the whole human race should be exterminated, and that he would do his best if he got the chance. On April 14, 1930, 39-year-old Carl Panzram was found guilty of the murder of Robert Warnke and sentenced to death by hanging. While on death row, Carl admitted to the murder of 21 men and boys and the sodomy of over 1,000 people, with zero remorse for his crimes. While at the gallows on September 5th, 1930, the executioner asked if he had any last words. Carl spit on him, and he responded by saying,
"Hurry it up, you Hoosier bastard. I could hang a dozen men while you're fooling around."
Story of Carl Panzram, the self-proclaimed butcher of humanity. And he is horrible because he's the kind of killer who would hold your head in his hands and snap your neck while your child watches you crying, because he hated people, not just a specific kind of person, not a specific age or gender. He hated humanity, and he didn't fear dying because he even hated himself. He did not have narcissistic personality. He hated himself. And that's what really separates him from a lot of the other serial killers out there. Thank you to Dave and Chris, the creators and actors of the horror comedy series Corpse Control. Dave played Panzram and Chris played Officer Henry Lesser. And I asked Dave, I said, "Hey, you'd make the best Carl Panzram." And he just said, "Thank you." For me, it's a compliment. If I approach you and I say, "Hey, would you like to portray this serial killer?" It's a compliment, all right? I'm not trying to insult you. I'm not that kind of person. I'm nice and I'm sweet and I don't want to piss people off. So peace and love, yo, peace and love. So check out Corpse Control on Instagram and YouTube. The show follows two zombie exterminators who go about their day-to-day lives in the Big Apple, and it's pretty freaking hilarious. And I recommended the series on a previous episode on our never-ending quest, if that says anything. Speaking of that,
there'll be more, many more. They're coming for me now. And then they'll come for you.
On our never-ending quest to find a truly scary movie, I am recommending one that is a European horror film, and it's not popular here in North America. It is the 2015 The Hollow. After a family moves to a remote house in Ireland, they begin to experience unexplainable occurrences at night, and upon ignoring the warnings of the locals, the family gets torn apart by testing their fears. And it's an oddly calming that gradually progresses to unnerving as a film, and I really enjoyed it. It would be one of those ones that I would watch again. So I tried to scare you, now you try to scare me. Follow Lullaby the Fear Podcast on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and Slasher for updates and fun content. Thank you for listening to this week's lullaby. Sweet dreams. Lights out.